Christchurch, New Malden, 30th of May 2010, 6:30 service. Stephen Kurt preaching on Why on Earth Do We Need to Understand God as Trinity?
Okay, well, how good is your Christian gobbledygook? I wonder how good you are at Christian jargon. Let's have a go at it this evening, because church is full of it, isn't it? So we're going to test ourselves this evening and see how many of the following you know. Now, I'm not going to pick on people individually, but I want you to put up your hand if you know what these various bits of Christian gobbledygook, of Christian jargon, are referring to. So let's go with the first one. Chancel, hands up. Okay, nave. Just a few, we're not in the majority yet. Collect. Oh, quite a few. The gradual hymn. Oh, Chris Davis, well done. Heather knows as well. Okay, Chris, afterwards, will you explain to people what the gradual hymn is? Right, that was one of the most bizarre ones, I think, when I was growing up. I thought, absolution. Oh, a little bit better. Okay, the Nicene Creed. The Narthex. The Church Militant. Okay, yeah, that's nothing to do with trade unionism. Archdeacon. Quinquennial survey. Right, well, there you go. We won't bother going through them or what they all mean, but they're all rather odd and foreign-sounding terms, aren't they? They're certainly ones that don't use everyday language. Some of them, despite their language, we might believe, refer to things that are really quite important. But on others of them, perhaps we're tempted to think that not just the language, but the whole concept that probably lies behind it, is perhaps something that needs to be ditched if Christianity is ever going to be seen as relevant in the 21st century. And what we're thinking about this evening is whether the same is true of this. Understanding God as Trinity. Understanding God as one God in three persons. Is that a redundant piece of Christian gobbledygook? Is it a redundant piece of mathematical impossibility that the church needs to ditch, or at least sit lightly to, if it's ever going to be taken seriously? Now, there's no doubt that some, including some Christians, have been tempted towards this view. Trinity, after all, they say, isn't a term that's found in the Bible. And they go on to say it's a concept that only really emerged a bit later on, when Christians were into a type of philosophical speculation about the nature of God, which we're certainly not now. And now that we're not, surely we've got to, as I say, ditch, or at least sit lightly to this understanding of God as Trinity. So what we're asking this evening, as Helen said, is why on earth do we need to understand God as Trinity? And when we ask that question, the answer that I believe comes back to us is this. The Trinity is indeed a mystery. It is indeed something which, to some extent, is incomprehensible. It's something that we certainly can't get totally sussed. But it's the only way of doing justice to the God that we find revealed to us in the Bible, and particularly in Jesus Christ. And the reason why the church has hung on to the doctrine of the Trinity, and the reason why it's regarded as the benchmark between those who are Orthodox Christians and those who aren't, is because none of the really distinctive, none of the really central things about the Christian faith can be maintained without it. So what are those beliefs? Well, appropriately enough, on Trinity Sunday, I think there are three of them, and the first of them is this. Why on earth do we need to understand God as Trinity? Well, reason number one I'm suggesting this evening is because it safeguards the belief that there is one God. Here's a verse from the Old Testament, from Deuteronomy. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. That's a really important verse in the Old Testament, isn't it? It's so important that Jews today still place it inside little boxes which they place on their doorposts called mezuzahs. They place it in little boxes called tefillin, which they tie to their foreheads and their arms when they pray. But why is it so important? Well, the reason it's important is because of what follows in the very next verse. Deuteronomy 6, verse 6. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And the two are completely tied together. Believing in one God, in other words, is completely interlinked to making the right response to him. And we realise why this is the case when we look at the alternative. And when we recognise the link that always exists between believing in many gods and worshipping the things of this world. In other words, idolatry. And the reason why this link exists is because what always goes with the worship of many gods is a confusion of the world with those gods. Where in order to get something that we want from the world, that thing is made into a god and is then worshipped. Now in the ancient world it was all very obvious. They had gods of food, didn't they? They had gods of war, they had gods of love, and so on. Today it's still present, but it's just a lot more subtle, certainly in our culture. And it's based on a confusion of the world with the one who created it. Once we do that, once we confuse the world with the one who created it, once we make the things of this world into gods, there's a few up on the screen. As I said a few weeks ago when I spoke about idolatry at this service, it's then that those good things which the one God created, that they become destructive to our lives, rather than staying those good things that God created them to be and to enrich our lives. They're things that demand sacrifices from other parts of our lives, and they don't, in the end, as I've said, even give the things that they promise to deliver. And the reason why the Israelites always believed, or were meant to always believe, in one God, and the reason why this has remained the case with Christianity, rather than Christianity, say, believing in three gods, is because belief in one God always goes with a very clear distinction between that God and the world that he created. Believe in one God, as Jews, Christians, and indeed Muslims do, if we make that clear distinction between God and the world that's central to that belief in one God, and the result should be us being able to really enjoy the world that God created, rather than turning the good things within it into idols that then erode and dehumanize our existence. So the oneness of God, a really vital and important Old Testament and New Testament truth, that the doctrine of God as Trinity safeguards and teaches us. But that's just one thing. A second is this. Why on earth do we need to understand God as Trinity? Because of this. God may be distinct from the world, but that doesn't mean that he's distant from it. And this is where there is a major difference between what Christians believe and what Muslims believe. Within Islam, there's such an emphasis on there being one God who is distinct from the world that God then isn't understood as having come close so that we can know him personally. God himself, according to Islam, is completely separate from the world. And whilst we can know his will through the Quran, what we definitely can't do, and Muslims are very clear on this, is know him personally as our Father. Now, when we consider how corrupt and materialistic and frankly idolatrous the the Christian church in Arabia was when Muhammad formed Islam, and when we consider the earnest desire which he and other Muslims have had to avoid idolatry and all its terrible effects, we've got to, I believe, respect that motive and also acknowledge all the good that has come from it. But having said that, where Judaism and Christianity are very different is in believing this. In believing that the oneness of God and the distinction between him and the world can also be combined with the sense of his closeness, with his intimacy to the world as well. Because we actually see that throughout the Bible, don't we? We see this constant emphasis on God's presence amongst his people. It's not something that begins in the New Testament with the coming of Jesus. It's something that's present throughout the Old Testament. It reaches its climax with the coming of Jesus and after his ascension in the coming of the Holy Spirit. And the reason why the early Christians were convinced that the Son and the Spirit, Jesus and the Holy Spirit, should be included within their understanding of the one God was really for two reasons. Partly because they saw Jesus and the Holy Spirit doing things that only God can do, things like forgiving sins, things like changing people's hearts, things like rescuing people from sin and the power of evil. All of those things were crucial in the early Christians deciding very early on that Jesus and the Spirit had to be understood within their understanding of the one God. But it was also because of this Jewish context that had always understood God as being able to be distinct from his creation while simultaneously being intimately involved within it. As I say, that is there throughout the Old Testament, with an emphasis on God being present with his people through things like his wisdom, his glory, and also in things like the tabernacle and the temple as well. And what that shows us is that understanding God as Trinity isn't something rather alien to the idea of one God and rather awkwardly forced within it. It's completely resting on an understanding of God very different from that of Islam. This truth, as I say, that God can be distinct from the world while at the same time being intimately involved within it. The two can go together, which is why we have the doctrine of the Trinity. It means that we can avoid idolatry. We can avoid making the things of this world into gods and all the destructive and dehumanizing effects of that, while at the same time still understanding God as someone whom we can know as Father, someone who is close and we can have a personal relationship with. But if that's true, if what I've said is true, why can't we believe in one God who sometimes makes himself known as Father, sometimes makes himself known as Jesus, as the Son, and at other times makes himself known as Holy Spirit? Why can't we believe in one God simply changing the mode from time to time in which he is able to operate? That would be simpler, wouldn't it? That would be easier to understand than one God permanently being three persons. Well, it might be easier to understand, but what it wouldn't do is preserve the final important truth about God that I want to suggest this evening that the Trinity safeguards, and it's this. Why on earth do we need to understand God as Trinity? Well, quite simply, because it's that preserves and safeguards and teaches us that God is love. Now, the connection here might not be obvious at first, but as well as the New Testament referring to the distinctiveness of the persons of the Trinity. It refers to Jesus the Son praying to the Father, doesn't it? It refers to the Son asking the Father to send the Spirit and so on. It refers to plenty of things that rule out the idea that it's simply one person changing roles. But beyond that, what we also see within the New Testament is an emphasis on the love between these persons as well. The love between the Father and the Son and the Spirit. We saw that in that reading that was read to us earlier of Jesus' baptism, didn't we? Where the Spirit came down upon Jesus like a dove, and the Father's voice was heard saying, "This is my Son, whom I love." And where this emphasis upon the love between the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit is important is in its reinforcement of the relationality of God. Because rather than worshipping a God who is just one and who's alone in his oneness, a God whom we might struggle to see why he'd want a personal relationship with anyone, the God whom we worship is a God who has relationship and indeed love at the very heart of his nature. What's the nature of the God that we know as Trinity? Well, it's love, constantly flowing between the Father and the Son and the Spirit. And that's why God loving us and incorporating us within the love at the heart of his being is something that's so natural to God. It's who he is, not just what he does, it's who he actually is. And of course, that model of unity in diversity within God himself, it's that that provides the model for why we as a church should be similar in the way in which we live and work together. It's part of the reason why we've put so much thought into establishing the gifts and talents within this church recently. We want to become a church that models, by the way we live and work together, that unity in diversity, that diversity in unity, that is actually the essence of God himself, completely channeled by his love. So why on earth do we need to understand God as Trinity? We need the Trinity to preserve God's oneness. That's the only thing that can keep us from idolatry and all its destructive effects. We need the Trinity so that we can understand how God can be simultaneously distinct from the world while also being present within it. And perhaps supremely, we need the Trinity so that we can understand that God is love. And so we can understand why it's so completely in his nature to have created us and rescued us so that we could be included, so that we could be incorporated within that love that is completely at the centre of his being.